Awards aren't always a true indication of whether something is worthwhile or not, but when a new film arrives with as many prizes as My Summer of Love has received, it's best to pay serious attention. It won the top prize at the Edinburgh Film Festival, the BAFTA Award for Outstanding British Film of the Year, two Evening Standard British Film Awards, and a London Film Critics Circle Award. The film, which was directed by Pavel Pavlikovsky, stars Patty Considine and two newcomers, Natalie Press and Emily Blunt. It opens today at the Lincoln Plaza Cinemas and the Landmark Sunshine, and it gives me great pleasure to welcome Natalie Press and Emily Blunt to my show today. Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
How would you describe the film? It's about two women who are complete opposites, but who provide something that the other one feels is missing. Is that a fair description, do you think?
Yeah,
that's fair. That's a fair description. They're both yearning. They're both wanting more than their situation offers them, and they find it in each other, and so they go off on this intense summer together and learn. It's about self-discovery and awakenings and all those things.
You think so? I think it's more about self-deception than anything else.
Isn't
it
that
really?
Too.
It's yeah, a lot of people fantasizing things or believing in things that they shouldn't always believe in.
Maybe, yeah. There's always that mistrust between them as well. So there's always the danger that, they are discovering a lot about themselves, but they're also deceiving each other. Certainly Tamsin is deceiving Mona in many ways.
You play Tamsin. Natalie, you play Mona.
Yeah.
She's a working-class girl, rough, but very smart and just bored with provincial Yorkshire.
Yeah. Mona's lost her mother, and she never knew her dad, and she's losing her brother to Jesus, in a way. He's a born-again Christian who's become obsessed with being a born-again Christian.
A reformed violent criminal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he's pouring away all the alcohol in the pub that they grew up in, which is their kind of livelihood. And so Mona is disillusioned, and she's lonely. And one day she looks up from the field that she's lying in, and there's a girl on a white horse who's extremely beautiful and quite posh. And the fact that this girl chooses to address her is what sparks the whole film.
It's also about crossing the gaps that are created by class and entitlement in England. And although there were thoughts around the time of the Beatles that would all change, it's never changed.
Right. It's interesting you say that because for our director, Pavel Pavlikovsky, the 60s are a really seminal time in his psyche. And insofar as a film is always its director's psyche laid bare, or what they think of the world encompassed in a storyline, the film was always aiming to be completely timeless yet contemporary. But if there's any sensibility there, it would be the 60s. He used to talk about that because when he was growing up in Poland, he obviously couldn't leave the country, and hardly anybody could, but his mother was a ballet dancer, and she used to travel to Europe, and she used to bring back records for him and, like, leather jackets and all these remnants. And, you know, that's a really, really special time in his mind.
So he talked about those things with you when he was directing you?
I heard snippets of his conversations with other people and stuff. And I know that he chose Edith Piaf because she was a big part of all that.
Well, we should back up. He chose Edith Piaf as for a scene. There's mm-hmm. a scene when the girls dance together to something by Edith Piaf.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's called The Crowd, isn't it? Is it called The Crowd? La Foule or something? And
yeah,
it's about being swept up with the crowd. And it's a very invigorating piece. And you feel yourself spinning off into another world with it. And it's this scene where the two girls dance together. And it was actually a scene that Pavel picked for the audition piece, you know, to find the right coupling. And we did that. That was the first scene we did together. So.
Well, I understand he auditioned a lot of people, including some very famous young actors.
Mm-hmm.
And he wound up with the two of you.
Yeah. Not, you say that like, and he got you two.
Well, you've become instant stars as a result of this film. And I'm sure that now there are many roles that are being offered you. Is it not true?
It's true.
You've won awards?
Yeah. I'm getting great scripts and great auditions, which is fantastic. I've got a bigger gap to kind of close because, in a way, I hadn't really done very much until I did this film, so it's been slightly slower, my journey.
Emily, you've had some experience before, but not feature film.
Not in feature film. I mean, I'd been working for a couple of years, and I'd done theatre and I'd done a lot of TV, but nothing like this. So it was a whole nother world for me. And we both very much were thrown in at the deep end. But, you know, it was Natalie's first feature film, and she's the lead, and it's a massive undertaking. And,
well, it was my first time on something for more than a couple of days.
Yeah.
The accents are really important in England, and actors have to do a lot of different accents. In your case, Natalie, you had to develop a West Yorkshire accent?
Yeah. I kind of enjoy accents, and I got my ear for accents is okay.
Can you do posh, or does Emily have to do that?
How she speaks now, I mean, I think how we speak now would be regarded as pretty posh, maybe. But voices. But Natalie can do any accent if she puts her mind to it. She has a real gift, a real ear. So I didn't take her long to kind of nail it, the Yorkshire accent.
I understand that you shot during the hottest summer in 50 years.
Yeah.
Yorkshire is in the north of England. It's usually pretty cool.
It rains all the time. I don't know why, but Pavel just really wanted to take that risk of filming in this, in these landscapes which he'd fallen in love with. He'd go hiking, you know, for months and driving around, and he just decided, he put his foot down, he said, we have to shoot here, this is the place. And
it is quite beautiful.
It is beautiful, but it looks more beautiful in the film, because I think we were so lucky with the heat, and we had like 2-3 weeks of like this blazing sunshine, and it cast this hazy light over the film, and it just gave it such a kind of poetic look. If you want to go on a summer holiday, don't go to Yorkshire. It's not normally, the vital destination.
And despite the mansion that your character lives in, it looks like a pretty depressed place these days. The pub in town, was that a real place, Natalie? The pub that you supposedly lived in?
It's a real pub run by real people, and they kind of wound things down for when we were filming. Pavel would be inspired by the guys who ran the pub. Like, if it rained, he'd ask them what they would do in the rain when we were trying to do a sunny scene. And, you know, we got a lot from our locations. It wasn't like, I didn't have anything to compare it to at the time, but I learned that it's harder, in fact, to film in a studio with a set. So we were quite privileged in the fact that we shot in the real places.
Mm. My guests are Natalie Press and Emily Blunt, the stars of a new film called My Summer of Love, which opens today at the Lincoln Plaza Cinemas and the Landmark Sunshine. The film doesn't seem to have been shot in a typical way. There wasn't a real shooting script, was there?
No, there was a... I think he stripped everything down. He stripped out all of the mediocre scenes that he had in mind, so that he had a...
You had a lot of mediocre scenes.
That's what he said. He like stripped it all down till he had the main storyline he wanted, and the turning points and the juicier scenes. Those were all written in from the start. Those, you know, the betrayal, everything was always there. We knew the story. We knew where the story was going.
Any improvising?
Improvising. We don't really like to use it because, you know, he really was. Pavel created an atmosphere in which we could be open, in which we could riff around subjects, but we weren't freewheeling, we weren't sort of, it wasn't a free-for-all, you know, we really knew what the scene was about, and he'd pick out lines he really liked, and it was about us finding a rhythm within the scene and not being kind of regimented by a script.
Well, there's this wonderful moment where you recommend reading material to Mona, and you tell this woman who, this young woman who obviously comes from, would never have known who Nietzsche is. You should read Nietzsche. Or maybe Freud.
Yeah.
Which is a great laugh line in the film. And that was written?
That happened on the day, actually. That was a scene that happened in the moment. And Pavel just decided, I think the scene was about something else initially, about me talking about feeling lonely at being at school. And I don't know, we were just riffing around the subject, and gradually I could feel it growing onto... And I think, Pavel and I had always had the intention of having Tamsin having this philosopher she could live by, maybe not someone she knew that much about, but to find some kind of philosophy to kind of add
well,
to
her. Well, it's a way of taunting Mulder well.
And so I guess we found the scene starting to turn into that direction, and he just suddenly said behind the camera, talk about Nietzsche. And so it happened, and all the kind of reading I'd done on Nietzsche just went bleh, and it just kind of fell out. So that was a very kind of moment-to-moment.
Well, the girls are one-upping each other. Natalie, you one-up Tamsin by being more experienced and letting her know about your sexual experiences.
It's kind of like a dare, the relationship, from the very moment that it starts. And the romance is very much part of that dare, and it's also a part of the way that they are complicit in their kind of screw you attitude towards men. So the relationship is very much kind of a series of dares that becomes a reality.
And a dangerous adventure.
Yeah.
Because
absolutely.
it does get dangerous I don't know how to describe it, but it's more than just girl meets girl on a hazy summer day.
Yeah.
Although there have been a number of films that have been based on the same premise. This isn't like Heavenly Creatures, and it isn't like 13.
Oh, thank you, because we've been so heavily compared to both of those films.
Well, only because they're a recent memory.
Yeah.
They are, I haven't even seen Heavenly Creatures, but I know that they are different, but yet they're kind of trying to compare it.
I was talking about accents, and Paweł Pawlikowski is Polish, mm-hmm. as we've ascertained. That means he has his accent as well, probably very aware of not having an accent like other people. But do you think that it also allowed him to look at all of this with an outsider's eye at the same time that he has an insider's eye? He's been living in England for a while now.
Yeah, I think definitely. I mean, he's a Polish guy who's lived in England for a long time, but he has a European sensibility and appreciation of beauty, and he's very excited by cinema that's particularly European. And
so this doesn't look like a typical British film.
Exactly. The class elements of the film are not the story, where you get a lot of gritty realism, where the class issue is the story. Mm. That's just a small element within the film. And he's used his Polish DOP, Ryszard Lenczewski, to make as much of the natural light as possible, so you get this really beautiful, delicate kind of colour just pervading all the scenes. And, he was just very into beauty, which is quite rare for British film, yeah.
Had you seen his previous film, The Last Resort?
Yeah, which is extraordinary. And, people say, oh, it's so different from this, it's completely different. But he says, it's still about three characters who have passions, who are yearning and for wanting more. And that is the similarity to Summer of Love.
But, all yearning for transcendence,
yes,
of one sort or another.
Yes.
Now, there are three characters in the novel that it's based on. The third character, Phil, the brother, the ex-con who's found Jesus, doesn't exist. So this is a total creation of Pavel's. It has to have angered a few evangelicals in England.
Well, it's interesting, the reaction to that from country to country. Pavel has great affection for the born-again Christians, and he's a Catholic himself. It's just used as a device in the film for Phil's way of dealing with the fact that he is an angry young man. You know, it could have been anything. I think it's just that Pavel goes and looks at different groups of people when he's not sure about something, and the one that's most charming to him or the one that fits the most is the one that he'll use. Like, we looked at a lot of other teenagers in the area for characters to be kind of friends of Mona's on the fringes, but none of them were particularly remarkable or had anything amazing about them. So he didn't choose to go that way. And then with the born again Christians, he just found them really charming, and so there they are.
Well, he did draw upon some of your own talents. I'm sure that Tamsin's cello playing was not in the script, and neither was Mona's ability to draw.
Yeah.
Did you actually do that drawing, Mona?
Yeah, she did everything.
That wasn't a cutaway where somebody else did the drawing and then...
No, that was... I used to do drawings, people's portraits, and he saw that, and he, you know, he decided to use it in the film, and that was very, very exciting for me. I mean, I changed the way that I drew to be more like the way I thought Mona would draw. Like, when you're in love with someone, you make their eyes bigger and their mouth bigger, but you're not aware of it. So I did things like that, and it was just very, very, very exciting, and really... The best thing for me about the whole film was that I've never really had a director kind of take my brain as seriously as he did, you know? So there were lots of ideas that I could go to him with that have ended up in the film, which is a great honor.
And you didn't have to fake the cello playing either.
No, I didn't. I mean, I kind of wondered if they should dub it, because I used to be able to play, and I used to be quite good when I was a kid, and I'd play every day, and then I gave up when I was 16, and Mum was sort of devastated, you know, but I don't know, I discovered a social life, so maybe that suddenly became more important. And then,
but one of the points. She's not a great cello player.
So that's okay. And Pavel was like, it's fine, it's endearing, you know, but I can hear it's not note perfect, and maybe it doesn't matter that it's not. But I think Tamsin can hopefully persuade Mona that anything she does is beautiful, and so maybe in that way it doesn't matter.
Just one more thing. They often talk about chemistry between co-stars.
Mm.
It's obviously there, and you hadn't met each other before you started on
this film. It's the most bizarre thing, isn't it? We're complete strangers, sort of flung together to work very intimately, but I think everyone on that film, we had to be on the same side. It was such a collaborative effort, and, you know, in order to keep the spark between us, we had to just throw ourselves in at the deep end and be really brave enough to do that.
So would you want to appear in another film with Emmeline?
That would be amazing. I mean, I don't see how on earth that would ever happen.
Yeah, it would be hard. I don't know how they'd allow that to happen.
Well, maybe part two. My Summer of Love 2.
Yeah.
If it were Hollywood, that's what would happen.
Oh.
I've been talking with the two stars of My Summer of Love, Natalie Press and Emily Blunt, along with Patty Considine. The film opens at the Lincoln Plaza Cinemas and the Landmark Sunshine today. What a pleasure it's been to talk to you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.